Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got Steve Schoenbaum on the line. Steve, how you been?
Good, Michael. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Great to have you. You've done some amazing work, and you know, obviously, you know, in the intro, I talked about your acting career and you know the business that you've launched and all of that. And just to start off, you know, here we are in 2024. If there was one thing that you could fix in organizations that you're not already doing, what would that be right now?
Great question. I would say what I'm seeing trending is everyone has a good mission statement. I would encourage all companies, organizations, teams to go further than the mission statement, get their teams together to start to share what those words mean to each one of those people. And then the last step is to then figure out how to agree on some behaviors. So that's kind of the run we're going on, is get that mission statement. It's awesome. Then get people to kind of explain each individually, what does that mean to them? You know, like one of our statements is laugh with, not at. If you ask seven of my staff members, they may define that phrase slightly different, which is great. And then the next step would be, all right, so how can we align on a behavior that can actually play out that laugh with, not at? So to answer that, it would be, let's go from mission statement to definitions of words, and let's just agree on some behaviors, because behaviors are hard to argue. Words are.
Yeah, it seems like in every aspect of life lately, a lot of people pretty much stay surface level on things. You know, so basically use the analogy of they'll use a rake to kind of clean up things. But if they want to get to, you know, to figure out what is in that soil, you have to use a shovel. You got to dig, you got to ask deeper questions and more questions, because questions can, you know, of course, bring on more things, but it brings on clarity. And it seems like a lot of organizations struggle with going down that path. They just like, okay, we're going to ask an initial question. Everybody says, okay, it's this. And we're like, okay, great. And they move on to the next thing, and they haven't really finished what they've been working on. And what is unfinished, I find, ends up becoming a problem later on. And having worked in healthcare as long as I did, I'm a big advocate for preventative care instead of reactive. And unfortunately, it seems like society and in business, people are still in that reactive state.
Yeah. And I think it just takes time. And some folks, some companies think they don't have the time. I don't have all the answers, but I know that it's easier to have a 10-minute meeting and everyone agree on fancy words than it is to have like some hard work to roll up your sleeves and really figure out, like, you know, what do we need to do? We call it good to do's. Good to know's are fun to share. They are good to know. Communicate. We got to respect one another. We have to build trust. We have to be collaborative. We have to be empathetic, compassionate. I mean, I could just do a run on words that I've been hearing for 27 years, and they're all lovely words, but it takes a little bit more work, a little bit more vulnerability to like actually dive in and say, all right, what are we going to do about it? And you're going to have to see some of the dirty. You might have to do some of your own self-reflection. So I get the fat, I call it fast food. I get the fast food. There's a need for fast food when you're on the fly, but we also have to get into the substance.
It's important. It's those, what we like to call difficult conversations sometimes, because if you don't, then it just lingers. And I've seen in organizations, especially when you start talking about workplace culture and all of that, a lot of it is something that's been kind of lingering for a while. And then finally it bubbles up, and then leadership goes, how did this happen? What's going on? Yeah. You know, case in point, my spouse, where she works, there was someone that left the organization abruptly last week, and everyone was kind of shocked by it. And because they'd been there for several years, but they said, well, you know, they didn't feel understood or heard by management or things like that. And it was, you know, apparently, you know, from my vantage point, it's like, well, that's definitely a communication issue, because I don't get that from the management, and neither did my wife. So where everyone's just confused. So it's one of those things where it could have been prevented if, you know, both sides of the table, you know, would open up and talk. Cause I think we hear, especially now with burnout and all this and the long hours and all the things you're hearing about and people complaining about is there's a two-way street. So you got to have an opportunity to be able to be comfortable in talking about why, as an employee, you're feeling burned out, what's going on. Because in many cases, and I'm sure you'll agree to this, when leadership delegates to people, they're all-star employees or whatnot, what happens is they do it because they trust you, you're good, you're great. But sometimes as leaders, we're not really good about keeping track of how much we've delegated to you. And we go, oh, wow, well, I'm so sorry. I feel bad about that. Okay, let's reship that. So, but you can't just continue to take it and not say anything. Just say, okay, what are my priorities based on all the other things that you've assigned to me right now? Simple question. All of a sudden it brings awareness to it and it starts digging those deeper questions and it just makes things flow better.
Yeah. I think another term that comes up a lot is not just communication, but expectations. Let's establish some expectations. When expectations aren't met, then there's a lack of accountability. So there's just a track that I see. A lot of what I'm sharing with companies and sports teams and organizations is not that I'm some guru. I just have a lot of data. We've been teaching 27 years, but we go into spaces like military, government, corporate, sports, and we're doing it on the daily. So it's just this wild sort of diversity of audiences. So what I love, Michael, is being able to go back to a company and say, hey, look, I'm just letting you know what I see. And I look for patterns. And a lot of the patterns you just mentioned, a lot of that disconnect comes from a lack of alignment on expectations. If you're my boss and you expect me to hit a certain revenue model and you expect me to be in the office at this time you expect me to receive calls. I'm not saying this is right, at like 8 p.m. on a Friday night. And I'm not aware of those expectations, then we need to reset, because I'm going to constantly be very frustrated by the boundaries that I perceive are being broken. And those conversations usually could take about a half hour to reset. So expectations are huge when you're onboarding people onto a company and saying, here's the culture you're joining. These are the rules of the game in terms of how our team, our organization, our company runs. And is this a fit? That's it.
Yeah, it reminds me, and I've shared this several times on the show, a company I worked for 24 years ago. And I remember my first day, my boss came up to my cubicle at 3:32 p.m. Yes, I remember the time.
Yeah.
Because he came and he says, okay, I'm just going to lay down the ground rules of what it's like to work here. I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. And he said, I don't care when you get here. I don't care when you go home. All I need is you to... do your job. When you get your job work done. Yeah. If you need anything, here's my number. Here's my cell number. I'm here Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I'm at our Virginia location. Call me, text me anytime.
So did that work for you? Did that work for you?
I turned down job offers at other organizations that would have paid me more, and I stayed there. I stayed there for years.
This is really interesting. I love to chop this up and also want to maybe get to like the levity and the humor that's incorporated into our curriculum as well, because we can't take ourselves too seriously.
Right.
But what you just shared, Michael, is really interesting, because there are people that could not stand that direction. That's what's important, is for us to know that rhythms for your style. It does for me as well. Like, I don't like to be micromanaged. Tell me exactly what you need. There'd be some folks that might turn around and say, I didn't have good leadership. No one was there to support me. And that's not wrong either. But if you know prior to joining that organization, that that's the leadership style, then you can make a decision whether it's right fit for your learning style and your management style. So I just think that's a really good point, because you say that to me and I'm like, I love that. I can name five people right now, which I won't, because I don't want to break confidentiality, but friends of mine who would have a very difficult time with that style. So that's what's interesting, is we need to explore, what works for people and what doesn't. And there's no perfect answer.
And I love that too, because as you said, what works for me may not work for a colleague of mine that needed that. And we're guidance. We're seeing that now, and again, I always hate doing this with a broad stroke, but in some of the, and you would have, the data to, share this, is you know, some of the younger generations, the millennial generation and Gen Z, and we'll see how Gen Alpha turns out. But I want to say stereotypically, but you tend to see things that they want a little bit more hands-on approach from their management style, where, you know, they want some guidance or, you know, but again, that's one of those things going back to your comment earlier about having that conversation of saying, what type of manager do I need? And what, and align it that way, because most leaders, you know, can adapt. You know, and I've done that in my career where some people I was a little bit more around and helped and directed. Others, I'm like, you just hand them the ball and let them run. You know, it's a one take kind of thing. It's like, you, here's the lines, you do it, they do it, it's done, and no problem. But others, like, we're gonna have to work on this one a little bit, because, you know, they approach things differently. So I love that comment. So share about your business. And what I mean by that is, you know, kind of walk us through, because obviously you've worked with all kinds of different organizations, which speaks volumes to the success of your company, because they always tell us, you know, an entrepreneur, quote unquote, school, you need to, you know, niche or niche down, you know, basically to that. But you've been across the board, you know, with, you know, athletes and military personnel, corporate, you name it. So, and one of the things that's kind of underwriting too there is, I think there's so many similarities between all different industries. And of course, everybody thinks they're different. Of course, there are variances, but, you know, kind of walk us through some of the things that you do without giving away the kernel secret recipe, you know, and helping these organizations really flush out some of the things that's going to, you know, take them from the level they're at to, you know, where you take them next.
Yeah. And you said an interesting word, you said niche. And so, yeah, we're not niched when it comes to our audiences, but we are niche in terms of how we deliver. So that's where we niched, because that's something important for folks listening and entrepreneurs, like, define niche. It doesn't maybe have to be a niche to audience. It could be your style. So we're very niche when it comes to what we do, which is presentation skills and teamwork. That's it. If you ask us to go in and do like financial IQ, we're not going to lean into that space. So we focus on presentation and teamwork. And the way we do it is by using improvisation as a gateway to come up with practical behaviors. But from an audience perspective, yeah, it's pretty varied. We think and believe that focusing on what we have in common can help expose some people's talents and giftings. So no matter if it's a company, an organization, a sports team, our style allows to create a personality x-ray where you can bring out some people's learning styles in a positive way. We're not sitting there psychoanalyzing. And then the other thing that's just simple, Michael, is when you do improvisation and you do it in a healthy manner, like, our rules are laugh with, not at, have each other's back, and celebrate small wins. Those are all rules of the game. And I say them quickly, but it took 27 years to get to that level of simplicity. You know, laugh with, not at, have each other's back, celebrate small wins. If we follow those rules, what ends up happening is something that I used to not pitch, which I do now, which is, we got to do hard things together. I used to avoid that. I used to avoid that sell, because I was like, oh, playful, playful, fun, playful, active, engaging, interactive. And these phrases are so pervasive now. But you know what else? We need to roll up our sleeves and do something slightly challenging together. And it's going to be safe. But improv is not easy for people to get up and be spontaneous and to be in front of their colleagues and to have to focus on listening and sharing the space and coming up with creativity on the fly. What ends up happening is you create a wild bond because you've been through something slightly challenging without maybe having to get everyone together and do a ropes course. So that's my new game on 3.0 is, yeah, it's going to be fun. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of engagement, but also, yeah, it can be uncomfortable, and we need to do uncomfortable things together, because running a business and navigating in the world, it is slightly uncomfortable. But again, it's done under the premise that no one's going to be laughed at and no one's going to be hurt. So that's kind of how we approach our training.
I love that. And it reminded me, it was years ago, again, I worked in an organization, and my boss and I, at appearance, from both her perspective and mine, we're not the same type of person. We approach things completely differently, but we took one of those team building exercises, and they did a personality test, and it was based on colors and all of that. And what was so funny is her and I came up as being the same color. it got to the point she was so upset with the facilitator and everybody else is laughing. I'm just standing there going, I need popcorn. This is going to be fun to watch. And he was explaining, and they actually excused the class so he could explain to her and to me. I was like, okay, I am what I am, why we both scored the same and those things. It took her months to finally come to grips that we were similar in that. I got along with her great. We had a great relationship, but she just had a real tough time thinking that I was that way, because the way that she perceived me was something different. And perception is one of those things, again, I think that comes up a lot with issues in organizations, is this, you know, perception of this is how it is. And it's just when you mention the personality angle of some of the work that you do, it brought that, you know, to mind again. It's like, yeah, perception is one of those things where it can get you in trouble if you're not careful.
Yeah, well, we're complicated human beings, you know? And I'm not against personality assessments. In fact, we do a lot of work where we'll take companies that have gone through the DISC and different DISC assessments or any of those out there. And then again, what I'm passionate about is, cool, let's take all this data and all this information, even this situation you just mentioned with you and your colleague, you know, don't know the dynamic, but you mentioned that she was kind of a little thrown, probably because she had you in sort of a narrative, you know, and had you in sort of a category and she didn't see herself in that same category, whatever. We could spend 8 hours getting captured with that argument versus, all right, I'd step in and say, your colleague and you, all right, Michael and your colleague, we don't need to name her. Let's agree on behaviors that we can implement right away to achieve X, Y, and Z. Again, it goes back to, we're arguing over quadrants and personality assessments and words and acronyms. And I think those are very important process to focus on. What is it we want to do as an organization? But more importantly, let's now get out of the whiteboard. Let's get off the poster. Let's get out of the room once we've had a good, robust discussion. And you know what, Michael, you, me, and this other colleague, let's get our feelings out of the way and let's agree on what's a behavior we can all agree on that helps with company morale. And I want to go further now. This is like the tough part for me on this podcast. None of the behaviors are very interesting or exciting. None of them. They are not sparkly. They're not fun to teach. And here we go. Ready? And the crowd will not go wild, my friend. They won't. When someone comes into your office, put your laptop down. What's that good to do called? Laptop down. You know, remember people's birthdays if that's something that they enjoy being celebrated for. You know, stop your Zoom calls at 52 minutes instead of 60 minutes. And if you do that 3 times, you've gained 21 minutes because you've saved 7 minutes or 8 minutes 3 times. You know what I mean? Like, these are the things that I'm really into at 53 years old after doing this for 27 years. Because I could get in on stage, and you can too, and share all the sparkly things. You know, we got to trust one another. Who's going to argue with that, right? We got to communicate more. If you don't communicate, that gap will be filled by X, Y, Z. All these things have been heard and said ad nauseum. I'm really into, like, all right, let's agree on 3 things we can do, like on Tuesday morning when everything's upside down, laptop down, try to get 8 hours of sleep, and maybe try to schedule meetings at 52 minutes in the 60. Oh, and by the way, let's get rid of lunch and learns because people would just need to eat their lunch. That's it. That's it. Sorry to sound so direct.
Yeah. The world needs the directness, and I'm 100, I'd say. My accountant would kick me because I'm a former accountant, saying I'm 1,000% behind you on the lunch learn. I despise those.
Well, my wife gets very encouraging with me, Steve, don't get too defined, and not to interrupt you, Mike, but like, that's hard to say, but finally it's like, that's not productivity. That's called boundary breaking. You know, back to your point, expectations. Well, imagine if I interviewed you, Michael, for a job and say, hey, by the way, we kind of love to work through lunch. Well, then it's up to you to decide whether you want to be a part of that culture. But don't bring me onto a company and be like, we're all about compassion, we're all about empathy. Everyone says that. Who's going to interview you and be like, we're a cutthroat organization that doesn't care about anyone and we'll use you until you can't stand anymore? Like, no one's going to say that in a job interview. But like,
not typically.
If we're going to have like a lunchtime, like, let people eat lunch. I think that's important to share on the onboarding process. So again, people understand what they're joining and what the expectations are.
Yeah. And if yeah, it's like that, or it's there are the free pizza lunch. It's like, okay, you spent 50 cents on these people. Okay. That's a life changer. Yeah. Every time I see it, I just go, come on now. We haven't
but you can make, that far. You can make an argument that those are actually de-incentivizers. You know, it's like, I always say, you know, no offense, like save the free pizza. They can probably, hopefully they can afford their lunch. Give people robust bonuses if the company can afford it. Give people a day off when they've earned it. Remember people's anniversaries, work anniversaries. Honor people and give credit where credit's due. Don't copy someone on an email if it's not necessary. Don't have a meeting at 3:32 on a Friday telling them that they need to get something done that's going to take 8 hours. But definitely have a meeting at 3:32 on a Friday saying, hey, whatever you need, I'm here for you. Those types of things. Yeah.
Practical. Exactly. Exactly. It's 3:32 on Friday. It's quiet. Everybody get out of here.
Yeah. Take it out. Take care. Yeah. People love that. Wow. Way more than like a free pizza slice. No offense. Oh, yeah. Like you said.
Yeah.
It's $1.32.
Cut out an hour and a half early. It's like people feel like they just, you know, won the lotto. It's like, okay, this is a great day. And it's those little things like that that will keep people engaged. And like, you know what? I remember when they did that. And it just, it improves morale. And then it creates that incubator of an environment where people can be creative. And that's when you start seeing some amazing things happen and how you navigate through challenging times and all that other good stuff.
I love it. You're tracking, and I'm sorry to keep going with just an example, but I'm really into this. Just recently, we were working with a soccer team called FC Cincinnati. They won the MLS Cup last year. People follow soccer. You're nodding. It sounds like you do, but I'm not wildly familiar with the MLS world. But they were the worst team in the MLS when the management took over, the general manager and head coach. I had a chance to talk to the general manager. So they went from last to first, very rare. And they did it in 1 year. And I'll try to get right to the point. I asked Chris, the general manager, we were sitting on the sidelines getting prepared for my session. What do you think were the three or four things that you implemented that really made that difference? And I knew what he was going to say. And your listeners need to hear this. It's not, we spent $720 million in trades, like all the teams are trading, or we decided to redo our entire grass on our field and turn it into like a palace. No, one of the things he mentioned was they invited not just the players, but staff and support team into the lunch area so they could eat lunch together. That was the number one thing he claimed was a game changer. Second, they remembered every spouse, partner, significant other's birthday. These are the top two things he mentioned to me. Last is, third was, you know, he did a survey and the team was able to share what kind of food they'd like in the cafeteria. So they upgraded their food slightly. So think about that. Upgrading your food, inviting your additional staff to break bread with one another, and remembering people's birthdays. Those were three of the things they implemented that he feels had a huge factor in them going from last to first. And we need to remember that simplicity, respect, and kindness can go a long way. And it's very, very affordable. So.
You're here on that. So, Steve, I love this conversation. Where can people find out about you and this amazing work you're doing?
Thank you, Mike. It's GameOnNation.com is our website. And right now we're kind of in this 3.0 version, and we're have a newsletter that goes out every Wednesday. So if they go to the website, they just want to subscribe to the newsletter. We're providing content to help people with their presentation skills, to help people with their communication, and offering practical, tangible techniques that everyone can apply, whether you're a CEO of a company or you're volunteering, you're a coach for your girls' softball team. It doesn't matter. We're all presenters in some form or fashion. I'm really into including everyone in that presentation conversation. So
definitely, I'll have all that in the show notes. So Steve, thank you again for being you and for all this amazing work you're making workplaces in society better. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thanks, Michael. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.